No dairy, no sweets, only ripe vegetables, fresh fruit and whole wheat. I'm from the old school, my household smell like soul food, bro.
What's up, beardos? Welcome to episode 95 of The Bearded Vegans. I'm Paul.
And I'm Andy.
And we are The Bearded Vegans, a podcast featuring a dissection of all things vegan.
If you're just tuning in for the first time, you can find all of our previous episodes at thebeardedvegans.com. And you can always reach us by emailing thebeardedvegans@gmail.com.
In today's episode, we will talk about what we've been eating, go over the news, and then ask the question, what does Amazon's acquisition of Whole Foods mean for the animals?
Can't wait to get into this one.
So before we get into that, though, we have just one quick announcement that we made last week, I believe.
Yeah, we're gonna hammer this one home because we're real excited about it. And that is that on September 9th, we're going to be doing a live podcast recording at the Toronto Veg Fest with special guest Carol Adams.
Woo.
So that should be a fun time. We are officially at 3 p.m. in the studio theater. You can go to vegfoodfest.com for all the info and directions and all that good stuff. But definitely come out and make your presence known in the audience. I think it's going to be a real fun time.
Very excited for it. So let's move on into what we've been eating. Andy, you've had a couple heavy hitters, I think.
Some heavy hitters in the cheese department. So the first one is something that we announced back. We did an interview with Carlo and Carmela, the food duo, and they were talking about their favorite finds from Expo West earlier in this year, the big natural products food expo. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that we talked about was the fact that Upton's, who people know as the maker of some mighty fine seitan, as well as some jackfruit, they're branching out into ready-made meals, things you just have to microwave and they're good to go. And I saw someone had ordered some, and I went on a little search. I found veganessentials.com.
Nice.
Had them. Who is actually my rival in the Veg News favorite online store category. So I gave them my business. But I ordered it from them. Came very quickly. I got both the regular Mac and the Bacon Mac version.
Ooh.
And I'm a huge fan of the Bacon Mac that they make at The Break Room, which is their little cafe that's on the first floor of their seitan factory in Chicago.
The bacon that they make in The Break Room?
And so it comes in a box that has two containers. One is a bag of sort of half-cooked, pre-cooked pasta macaroni, and the other one is a pouch of the cheese sauce, kind of like the Velveeta stuff that you would squeeze on way back in the day. And I am a huge fan of their cheese sauce because it is very Nucci, and that is like just the stuff that speaks to my heart. I love
Nucci
it so much.
Cheese.
Nucci cheese. And so I made the regular Mac as the microwave instructions, where it's just like mix it all together, microwave it for a minute. And it was tasty, but the noodles weren't where I wanted them to be. And so then the second time with the Bacon Mac, I did their other preparation method, which is what they do at The Break Room, where you mix it all together and then you cook it on a pan. And that gets a little bit of brown, a little bit of crispiness. And delish. Delish. We definitely, again, not quite as good as what's at The Break Room. I feel like some of the cheese sauce cooks away a little bit when you're cooking it. Maybe I just did it for too long. But the pasta came out perfectly. And, like, don't expect Kraft mac and cheese if you get this stuff. But
yeah.
I'm a big fan of it. It's my favorite boxed mac and cheese, vegan mac and cheese right now.
Hopefully it'll make its way to Whole Foods soon.
Or you can quit being a bum and just purchase it yourself online, Paul.
I suppose. Quit being a bum and go out into the world and the public.
Maybe you could order it on Amazon.
That's maybe.
Anyway, and then the second cheesy thing that I tried was the new So Delicious Cheese Shreds.
Ooh.
Yeah, we posted this on our Instagram. I think a lot of people didn't even know that these were coming out. Didn't seem like they got much fanfare, but I'm always looking for a worthy day of replacement. I know the bar is set pretty low, in my opinion, but they have a mozzarella, they have a cheddar, and they have a cheddar jack. I picked up the cheddar jack. And I, as soon as I left the parking lot, I opened the bag and just took a handful and ate it straight out of the bag. Very enjoyable straight out of the bag. Yeah, which is not something that could be said of the original Daya formula. Apparently, their new formula is a lot more out of the bag friendly.
Is that out right now?
People have found it, but I haven't found it. But I've noticed that a lot of the Daya packaging now says original formula on it. So who knows, like, why would stores start to carry all of these varieties? Yeah. But hopefully I'll start to see it. But yeah, it was very tasty out of the bag. I was going to my parents' house and they happened to be having taco night, unbeknownst to me. So it worked out perfectly. My mom had a pinch of the cheese straight out of the bag. She's not vegan. She thought it was excellent. She thought it was really good, which is like obviously a big test for some vegan cheese.
Did you put it straight on the taco?
Put it straight on the taco. And it was very good. And then the next day I made a quesadilla with it and it melts very nicely.
Okay.
It's not as like gooey globby as like daya is when it melts.
Yeah.
It like gets a little, not like liquidy, but it gets a little more on the liquid side of things.
But not quite as much as that Trader Joe's.
Yes.
That just turned into just a puddle.
So that's the So Delicious Cheddar Jack Shreds. And I would recommend both of those things. Things are looking up in the vegan cheese world.
Who knew So Delicious was putting out cheese?
They're crushing it.
Yeah. So, Andy.
Yes, Paul.
I was in Philadelphia.
Wait a second. You spent some time in Philadelphia? It's almost like you live here now.
It's almost. And I branched out mildly to a new vegan place from my usual.
Was Blackbird closed?
No, I still went there almost every single day. And I went to the new... I did not get to go to... Blackbird opened up a second location, but it's much farther than where I live from the first location, so there's no point in going there. However... Yes, Andy?
Do you think the listeners of the show have concocted a drinking game where every time you say Blackbird, you take a shot?
A shot of wheatgrass, I hope.
A shot of Nucci cheese sauce.
But, however, Dottie's Donuts opened a second location right next to Blackbird. So now I can get the Blackbird that's near me. So now I can get all of my pizza and donut needs fulfilled in one quick stop, which I did do one time. And it was... Somebody said too much food, but still delicious. But the new place I went to was PS & Co. Have you been there, Andy?
I have not. I haven't even heard of it.
I wanted to go to Charlie Was a Sinner. My partner was up and we were going to go on a fancy date to Charlie Was a Sinner because I heard it was a fancy place. But then one day we were just like, I was just looking at places on the old Happy Cow and this place PS & Co. came up and we're like, let's check this place out. It turned out to be... pretty, I don't even know if I would say fancy, but it's on the more expensive side. So that kind of replaced our Charlie Was a Sinner. So I still haven't been there. However, Andy's shaking his head at me. It was great. If you can, you know, afford to spend a few extra bucks on your food at some point, definitely not like an everyday place. But the thing that I loved about it the most was it seemed like all of their, and I kind of alluded to this in the Instagram comment or Instagram photo that I posted of this, all of their food seems to be made there. So they have cheeses, vegan. It's all vegan. They have cheeses that are made there. All their burgers are made there. All their bacon is made there. So it's like, it's a nice change of pace from some of these places that you go to where you're like, yeah, this is delicious, but I'm eating a tofurkey sausage. Or yeah, this is delicious, but I'm eating the Light Life bacon.
That's like when we went on a fancy date, not you and I, Paul, but we went on a fancy date to Delise and Saracen in New York City, and it's like a very upscale fancy French dining restaurant, all vegan or mostly vegan, but it was like Maywa nuggets and stuff and like the boeuf bourguignon, and it was like, you're like, this is cool, but also just something about it just feels weird knowing that you could also just go to the corner store and get like this in a frozen bag, yeah, kind of thing. Yeah. So that's really cool. Mm-hmm.
And what I ended up getting was a tempeh bacon burger. Mm. And it was a tempeh bean burger, a couple strips of bacon, which I'm pretty sure were also tempeh, some barbecue sauce.
Made lettuce, of tempeh.
lettuce, tomatoes. And then there was like a nice little like thin slice of this miso cheese that they, ooh, that again, I'm pretty sure they make it there. I should have verified this before we hit record or before I posted that picture.
It's Daya.
but it was great because they do. The reason why I'm pretty sure they make it there is they have one of their dishes is like a cheese sample plate, which I would definitely get. But it's, again, very expensive.
Yeah. I'll have to check it out.
Yeah, it was good. I got a nice like smoothie. We got some nice cookies like that. They make them there afterwards. They were good, all around good. Spent a lot of money just on cookies, but no, it was great. I definitely would recommend it for you know the occasional night out.
Yeah, all right. That's PS & Co. You can find links to all that stuff on our show notes. And we also post a lot of pictures to the food that we talk about on our Instagram. I actually did a whole Instagram story review of the Upton's Bacon Mac and Cheese cooking process. It has disappeared into thin air at this point, but definitely make sure you're following us there to get the info on those things.
If you see a nicely photographed food, it's probably Andy taking the picture. If you see a picture of a food where you're like, that looks good, but something about the way this picture is taken makes it unappetizing, it's probably me because I stink at photography.
I need to enroll you in some sort of food photography course.
whenever Andy and I go out to eat and I get to witness firsthand his food photography skills, where he'll ask me for my phone and then use my phone's lighting to get the best lighting. It's magical.
Recently had dinner with friends of the show, the Vegan Moes, mm-hmm. and they showed me a new trick where they did the second phone with the light camera, but then they used a napkin as a diffuser, so it's not as harsh of a light. And I was like, this is brilliant. So we're going to step our Instagram game up soon.
There's like a graph, and it's like there's a positive correlation between how goofy you look when you're taking the picture and how great the picture comes out.
Yes. I've definitely seen people with like full size cameras that like get up and they're like standing on their chair above their food taking pictures before. I appreciate the dedication.
No judgment.
To get a dedication to the craft.
That's great.
Camera eats first.
All right, so let's move on.
Let's move on to the news. Paul, last week we talked about how we chose to not review Land of Hope and Glory, which was touted as basically the UK's version of Earthlings. And we talked about how we're just kind of at a point where we feel like we don't need to re-traumatize ourselves by subjecting ourselves to all this really horrible footage. Mm-hmm. And then in between that episode recording and now, a trailer came out for this new film called Dominion. And it is from the creator of a film that I haven't seen, but I believe it's called Lucent. And that came out in 2014. But a lot of people are posting this trailer around. And I was like, you know what? Let me give this a shot. And we'll post a link to this in our show notes as well. It is a trailer that there's sad stuff in it. There's definitely some physical violence towards animals within it, but it's not like super blood and guts kind of thing for the most part. So if you want to check it out, if you haven't seen it, if that seems like your bag, go check it out. But I guess I want to bring it up because I had a totally different reaction to this trailer than the Land of Hope and Glory trailer.
So it's a long trailer. It's like 4 minutes, 4.5 minutes.
They use a song that sounds awful lot like a Coldplay song, but I did a little Shazam action and it is not. Actually, I think it's a pretty great song. I really liked it. And I'm like, oh God, am I going to be one of those guys that likes Coldplay now?
But thankfully not, because it's not Coldplay.
I'm safe. But it honestly feels like they're like, well, this song's 4.5 minutes, so we got to make our trailer 4.5 minutes.
Maybe. And there was definitely a lot of like shots that coincided with the music, like the beat of the music would change the shots and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So it's a long trailer. What you said, you had a different reaction to this trailer than the Land of Hope and Glory trailer, but, and I agree, it's a different tone. However, couldn't that just be, this is the tone that they were like, this is what I want the trailer to feel like. This is what I want the trailer to be, because it doesn't really tell us what's going to happen in the movie. Like, it doesn't tell us if there's a narrative. It does, which doesn't seem like there maybe is, but it doesn't tell us if there's narrative. It doesn't tell us like how information is going to be presented. There's no narrator, so it doesn't tell us if there's going to, I'm assuming there would be narration.
Imagine if the narrator was the singer of Coldplay.
So it's like, you say you feel differently, you might watch this, but we also don't, for me at least, it's like, I don't really get even what this is going to be like. Like, for all we know, they could have chosen the few shots that were like the tame shots, because that's like, because that's what they want for the trailer, and then it could just be like another Earthlings.
Yeah, and it's certainly being touted as like the Australian Earthlings. So
we got the UK Earthlings last week and the Australian Earthlings this week.
We need one for every section of the globe, yeah. I guess. But yeah, I don't know. I think that it seems like it's likely to be that, but it's very visually appealing the way that it's presented. They definitely got their money's worth out of the drones that they purchased and or rented. It seems like at least 30 to 45% of the footage is drone shots. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, it just looks like a film that is visually interesting. And I guess I'm thinking from the perspective of a non-vegan, if they're like looking through trailers, if you see the trailer for Land of Hope and Glory or like Earthlings, I'm assuming there must be a trailer for Earthlings, but it seems like something that you might stay away from because it feels just like, this is just seems like some footage that's kind of thrown together. Whereas this one feels very intentional, feels like they spent a lot of time getting these very like artfully framed shots and this beautiful slow motion and all these things. So yeah, the film, I guess, remains to be seen. It's going to come out in March of 2018. Perhaps we'll see it. I feel like me personally, I feel compelled to see it at this point because I like how well the trailer was done.
So I want to talk about those drone shots a little bit because it's interesting because I've never thought about for these specific types of documentaries, like when I think about drones, I'm thinking like, and when I was watching this trailer, I was thinking this too. I was like, wow, the drones are definitely a useful tool for getting not the super detailed footage, but I'm sure they can fly a drone over any of these farms and maybe the farms won't even notice and they can snap some footage without them being noticed. I don't know if that violates any laws or anything, but so that's what I was thinking when I saw like, oh, there's a lot of drone footage. I was like, this is cool. They're utilizing technology to get a lot of these shots that they might not have permission to get, or they might not have access to get before. But then there was this shot. I'm about to spoil the trailer, so close your ears if you don't want the trailer spoiled. It was, I think it was the last shot of the trailer, and it was like, it kind of started off real close to one of the like the factory farms, and there was just like a big corral of cows, and then it just kind of like pulled back, and it just kept pulling back, and you saw the scale of this operation, and it was just this immense. It was just like thousands and thousands of, I think it was cows. Thousands and thousands of them, and I thought that shot was so, like, it's like, I don't know, when I think about someone flying this drone and yet they're able to make this shot that was like so emotional. There was so much emotion in this one shot, and I was like, wow, this is cool that they're able to do this with this technology that has been around for a year or two.
Well, it wasn't the last shot of the trailer, but it was coinciding with like a music break in the song. This is not the first time that drone footage has been used to this effect. Since 2012, Mark DeVries, who is the guy behind Speciesism, which is a documentary that I would like to revisit and review on the show at some point. He's been doing a lot of that work as well, but I think that this is certainly the best looking drone footage I've seen and put into a package that's just super compelling for me. So, yeah. So I don't know. We might yet review another horrible, film with lots of horrible footage in it.
The other thing I want to say about it is because you know how Earthlings was kind of like the different sections of Earthlings. This is how we use animals for entertainment. This is how we use animals for testing. This is how we use animals to eat. It was broken up into those different sections.
Yeah.
I am curious to see how Dominion chooses to break up the movie because there was footage of horse racing, but it was like two shots. There was like a horse racing shot. There was a dog racing shot. Then there was maybe later one more horse racing shot. But in a 4.5 minute trailer, it seemed like it's like, oh, okay, is there going to be like one scene of this? Is there like, because it was just interesting that they chose to show that. But everything else that they showed in that whole 4.5 minutes was, they maybe did a little bit of testing stuff. They showed some dogs. So that could have been testing.
They showed footage of like beagles seemingly being liberated.
Yeah.
It looked like. But yeah, it was odd. At first, I was like, because they introduced the horse racing thing pretty early on. And I was like, oh, cool. This is going to be more than just animals that are used for food. But then it was mostly just animals that are used for food, which obviously still need a lot of attention. But it'll be interesting to see how they incorporate those other issues, if there's a narrator or any of those things. So yeah, you can color me interested in this film. And Paul, you brought this up. Something that we actually didn't talk about in our review of the conference, we got a chance to see a section of a new series by Sean Monson, who's the director of Earthlings and Unity, called Earthlings Anthology, that was shown at, I believe, the Friday night plenary session at the conference. And essentially, we learned that Earthlings Anthology is going to be like these shorter segments And Sean Monson got up and explained, you know, this is the YouTube generation. This is the 30-second video generation. So instead of having this hour and a half long documentary, why not break things up into smaller segments that can be posted around online? I think that's smart. Obviously, certain films, we're seeing what the health, you know, right now is obviously reaching a ton of people. But, you know, I think it's good to have these things that are broken up and posted all online. But it was definitely a marked difference in the quality of the footage between the two, although the Earthlings Anthology one did use drone footage as well at the end.
Yeah.
But, like, what did you think compared to this? The segment we were shown was the very first one in this anthology series, which was on transport trucks, and it features Joaquin Phoenix driving with a transport driver who's kind of talking about his feelings on the whole thing, and he seems to kind of dislike his job and doesn't like how the animals are treated.
Yeah, and so he chose to, like, contact someone who then got in contact with Sean Monson, and that's how he kind of, like, because he is kind of, I mean, I feel like he is kind of putting his job at risk by doing this thing that I'm sure the people he's working for would definitely disapprove of.
Yeah, all to hang out with Joaquin Phoenix.
Yeah. He's like, I'll do the movie, but it's got to be with Joaquin. I liked it because it was different. That, like, what they focused on was different than other of these types of shows and movies that I've seen. Like, I think the most we've ever seen referencing the transport trucks was just like an offhand comment, like, oh, and the transport trucks are really horrible too, and it's really bad for animals on the transport trucks, and that'll be basically all that it shows. And this was like a whole 20 or so minute segment just on that. I appreciated that this is an area that has not been exposed, and it's just something else that, you know, is happening. So I'm glad that someone is documenting it. I thought it was also good that they got someone who literally works in that business to talk about it, because I feel like who's a more credible person to talk about transport trucks than the transport truck driver who is witnessing this every single day.
Yeah.
I appreciated those things. And then at the end of it, it kind of followed, I think it was in Toronto. I think it was the Toronto Save.
I thought it was in LA.
Was it in LA? Okay. I forget. This was like two whole weeks ago. I can't remember that far. But
I believe that's where Sean Monson is from. And I think it was in LA. But either way, it focused on like a save movement, animal save movement, where they do the vigils at the slaughterhouses when the trucks arrive.
Yeah. So it showed them, you know, like giving water to the animals as the trucks drove by. And it was very emotional. And that's where they had like a lot of that drone footage.
Yeah.
But it was definitely, it was emotional. Not a lot of dry eyes in the plenary session.
Yeah. It was funny because I think the vigils and the save movement is something that we've been like, what's the harm, but not for us kind of thing. And often I feel like for me, I would say that there's better uses of my time than doing that.
Mm-hmm.
But seeing that footage actually made me like really empathize with the people that were doing that and maybe kind of feel the value of what they're doing.
Well, did it make you feel that way? Because when you saw it, you were like, wow, this is a really emotional experience. And you were you empathizing more with like, if I was there, like I would be getting very emotional over this experience as well. Because I feel like part of me thinks that that's why I was feeling emotional about it, because I was thinking like, this is a very emotional experience.
Yeah.
But is that really beneficial though? Like, is it beneficial for me to get emotional about something? I guess it's good if it then, you know, makes me do something else about it. But in itself, is getting emotional about something, is doing an action that gets you emotional about something going to really be beneficial?
I don't know. I feel like the way you're posing that question, the answer has to be no.
It's a trap.
Thank you, Akbar. But I think, and this has always been my intuition on these things, is that I feel like going out and doing that particular type of activism would be kind of traumatizing.
Yeah.
And for me, I, you know, again, I haven't done it, so I could only sort of guess how I would react to it. But to me, it almost feels kind of debilitating. Now, it might be something that bolsters you to go out and do other stuff. I know, you know, obviously not everyone that does the save movement stuff only does that. Yeah. I would imagine most of the people involved probably go out and do other things as well. This is sort of their way to... This is their way to bear witness to all the suffering that's going on. We saw Anita, who founded the Save Movement, and she said at the conference, like, it's our duty to bear witness to the animal suffering. I don't know if I really agree with that. I think that, you know, traumatizing ourselves in that way, there's already so much trauma in this movement from so many different things, and we're just dealing with an inherently traumatic subject matter. Mm-hmm. I don't really know if that's good. I feel like that might be something that leads to increased burnout, perhaps. But hey, I guess we don't really know for sure.
And I mean, I will totally like give it to them that when like when you see this footage, when you see these animals, you're like, I want to do this thing for these animals. Like, I want to provide some comfort for the first and only time in their lives. It's like you want to do that, you know, but. I don't know.
I guess the utilitarian argument would be that's nice that you do that, but wouldn't you rather provide comfort for significantly more animals by doing vegan education or whatever it might be?
Yeah.
You know, so I don't know. But we've gotten very far away from our original intent of bringing this up, which was to compare this Earthlings anthology with this trailer for Dominion. You asked me how I felt after watching the trailer, and I guess I felt the same way that I felt after seeing Earthlings, which was, this is really horrible footage to watch. Like you, I was like, oh, I'm really glad, or not glad, but I'm like thankful that this aspect of animal agriculture is being documented. Like you said, it's something that you see footage from outside the trucks, but you never hear it from the transport drivers, who are kind of vilified and like these guys that are just pushing through protesters and stuff. Yeah. And they even had like the GoPros installed like inside the truck during transport and stuff. And you never see footage like that.
Yeah.
So that was powerful, but I didn't really feel like it was put together in a particularly compelling way. It's just by virtue of what it is, it's something that is compelling. It's something that's powerful.
Yeah.
But it's also one of those things where you're like, could this be put together in a better package that would sustain the attention of more people? Whereas the Dominion trailer is something that I'm just like, I need to see this. And I'm someone who is like very like, I don't need to see that shit anymore. I'm done with it. Hate it when I see it in my Facebook feed at this point. So I don't know. It felt like, you know, and you were like, you're being mean. Like, I was like really kind of ragging on the production values. And again, I'm sure it's really hard to get good production values when you're working on this subject matter and in these conditions, especially if you're like in a large industrial agriculture system. Like,
yeah,
like you're not setting up like IMAX cameras and being the perfect lighting and all that stuff. So it's like, you know, I'm sure that an immense amount of work went into making the Earthlings anthology footage, but to me, it wasn't super compelling. It didn't feel like a game changer. Whereas like Dominion, I'm like, oh, this could be the film about animal agriculture that shows real horrible stuff that's palatable to people because it's shot in a very beautiful way.
I'm excited about Earthlings anthology for two reasons. And only to know, I don't know if there's more than two reasons, but I can think of two reasons right now. One of them is, I kind of already alluded to it, I'm hoping that in this series of films, maybe there's other areas that I'm not thinking of that haven't been widely exposed, like the stuff that's already been in Earthlings. Because part of me is like, he's already done Earthlings. Like, is he just going to... And it's 12 different episodes. So even if he does one episode on food, one episode on animal testing, one episode on entertainment, one episode on pets, that still leaves, you know, 7 or 8 other episodes. So it's like, what is he going to do with those episodes unless he does like one episode on chickens, one episode on cows, unless he does that, which I hope it's not that. Like, I'm interested to see, and I hope that there is these other categories that maybe haven't been explored.
I bet it's going to be that.
Dang it. But the second reason I'm excited about it is because I do agree with him, and you agree too, about this whole, like, it's nice to put out these shorter, I don't remember, do you remember exactly how long it was? Was it like 20 minutes?
No, I think it was like 10 minutes.
Oh, that's it? Okay. Like,
He said they would vary from like 5 to 20 minutes or something along those lines.
Like, I do think that has the potential to be more effective because it's like, I think it might be easier, even if Dominion, say, ends up being this very well put together movie. It's like, it's easier to say, hey, watch this 5-minute video versus, hey, watch this awful hour and a half movie that's like very, very hard to get through, you know? And once someone watches the 5-minute movie, you can talk to them about it. You can like debrief on it. And then you can, depending on where they're at with it, you can get them to watch the other ones, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a very, very good point, Paul.
Thank you.
Good point, Paul.
Should we move on from this?
Yeah, let's move on. You found an interesting piece of news from our home state of Connecticut.
Yeah, just randomly came across this. This is from the New York Times. Abused dogs and cats now have a human voice in Connecticut courts. Last year, Connecticut enacted a law that, according to legal experts, made it the first state to allow judges to appoint lawyers and law students as advocates for dogs and cats in the cases of cruelty, abuse, and neglect. The Connecticut law is being watched closely by lawmakers, legal scholars, and animal activists, some of them with an eye toward adopting similar measures in other states. So the article goes on for a long time and talks about how this came about and like where it could possibly go from here. But I don't know how much there is to say about it, but I think that this is a good thing that's happening. It's slightly related to the whole, what's that movie that we watched?
Unlocking the Cage, which focused on Stephen Wise and the pursuit of legal personhood for chimpanzees.
Yeah, it definitely reminded me of that. And it's not the same thing whatsoever. It's not granting cats and dogs legal personhood, but it is, I think, a step towards animals having more legal representation. And it is tricky, and like they pointed this out in the article, how it's like animals are the one thing that tech legally property, but also like a sentient living thing.
Yeah,
so it's like there is this kind of weird I guess friction that happens because of that in the courts, but maybe this is one step towards it going towards like the good side.
So is this essentially like, say someone sees their neighbor neglecting their dog's chained up in the backyard and is skin and bones, like a lawyer could step in and like represent the legal interests of that dog? Is that kind of what this is saying?
I believe that's what it is. Or like because I think one of the cases they were talking about was someone who had gotten arrested like for drunk driving or something like that, or had gotten into a car accident, and there were like six pit bulls in the car, and they all had they had signs of dog fighting. And so I think because there's not someone like a particular party suing this person, like those dogs wouldn't have anyone to kind of fight for them. So it's like the court can appoint a lawyer specifically to fight for the needs of those animals. Hmm. That was my understanding of it, which is cool. And it seems like something that is a good thing and that should happen. And maybe this will lead to this happening with like pigs and cows and horses. Who knows?
The old foot in the door.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
good job, Connecticut.
Yeah, good job. Good job, Connecticut. I don't know if I
say that very often.
I don't know if the guy from Unlocking the Cage is what that update is, but you know, maybe if we're attacking this from more than one angle, we'll see some progress.
Yeah. I just start recalling him the guy from Unlocking the Cage.
Well, what's his name? Stephen Wise?
Stephen Wise.
Oh, I kind of remembered. So yeah, I don't know, Andy, did you have anything else to say about this? I just kind of wanted to bring it up.
Yeah, well, thanks for bringing it up. That's our bright spot in the episode.
I guess this next one is kind of a bright spot.
Yeah, this isn't news, but it is follow-up.
This is coming to us from theflamingvegan.com. This is an article that's a few years old, but relevant nonetheless, because I think I maybe made a little error in, I think even last week's episode when I said, or 2 weeks ago when I said something along these lines, but this article is titled Vegan Myth Busting Number One: Are Wild Animals Killed When Grain Is Harvested for Vegans? Did I say that weird?
I like your, no, it was good question asking inflection. This is something that I feel like this has been a recurring point that has been brought up, and we have refuted it to some extent, But, you know, essentially the argument that, well, vegans are all hypocrites because animals are still killed in the harvesting of your food. And, like, the big grain thrashers are thrashing up those animals. This is something that has factored into our discussions, even things like when we had a discussion about, is it ethical to have companion animals, even if it's a dog that is fed a vegan diet? Is that, you know, are you still going to be taking more lives than you're saving by feeding a dog a vegan diet because they're being fed grains and things that are, you know, the killing animals in the field kind of thing? And weighing in those considerations when we talk about, you know, how cruelty-free can something actually be? And we brought up a graph from, I think it was Counting Animals. I'll try and find it and put it in the show notes. It was essentially talking about the number of animals killed per calories, you know, yielded, essentially. And it was, it obviously showed that animals, you know, killed for like vegetables were by far the least by like a huge margin. So it's kind of like, well, yes, even if we accept that there is some harm caused by the harvesting of produce, that it's still significantly less than it is in the harm caused by, you know, eating animals or even consuming their secretions. So that's where this is all coming from. And we wanted to follow up because we got sent this great article.
And I mean, and they do point this out in the article. And I feel like something we've said on the show before anyways, is I think one of the easiest ways to refute someone saying that to you, trying to catch you with that argument that like, oh, well, you're killing more animals than I am, is to say, well, like most of the crops that are grown are being fed to the animals that you're eating. So it's like, you're not only killing those animals, but you're also killing all the animals, the hypothetical animals that are killed to produce those crops to feed those animals you're eating.
Yeah.
So that would be like the easy way out of that kind of trap that someone's trying to set for you. But maybe that's not even relevant anymore because according to this article, which was talking about how you know, like the meat industry and those sorts of companies are so eager to latch on to any sort of studies. I mean, everyone is are so eager to latch on to any sort of studies that are going to bolster their position. So in this case, would be to kind of be against veganism or vegetarianism. So it says, in 2003, a guy named Stephen Davis, who's an animal science professor at the Oregon State University, published a paper about the number of animals killed in producing crops versus beef production. He reviewed older, existing field studies, then performed some calculations using that data. To be specific, he used studies about the drop in the numbers of mice and other animals before and after harvests. So basically, the author of this article from The Flaming Vegan is trying to say that Stephen Davis didn't actually conduct his own study. He rather looked at different studies and then did some calculations based off those studies, which isn't necessarily a bad way to do a study. However, what the author points out is that he was kind of making these assumptions off of the other studies that weren't actually accurate. So the article goes on. Davis used a 1993 study by Tu and McDonald. Tu and McDonald set 33 mice free with these little tracking collars on to munch on grain, scurry, groom their fur, build nests, or whatever.
Whatever the hell mice do.
All through the harvesting season, they tracked their rodent gang. Guess how many died in a grain harvester? 1 out of 33. But 17, almost 50%, were killed by other critters, owls and weasels to be more specific. Statistically speaking, harvesting machines had virtually no impact at all. It's interesting that Davis used this study and counted 18 dead mice, but didn't care to factor in that 17 had died of predation. So essentially what the author of this article is saying is that only one mouse died of the harvesting machine, the thrasher, if you will, Andy. And the other 17 had just died of, I guess, natural causes, which was being eaten by the owls and other animals. But what this guy, Stephen Davis, was trying to say is, look at all these animals that died during harvest. He didn't care to specify that most of them, you know, would probably be dying if they were anywhere else. And so a lot of, you know, like the animal agricultural business kind of and other people who are trying to promote that viewpoint latched on to this research and said, like, look, there's so many animals dying, like 50% of animals are dying in this while the harvest is happening.
Yeah, it's really interesting to me because I didn't realize that was how they, you know, they being a bunch of people, were measuring how many animals died in the harvesting of the crops, that it was measuring the population density of animals mm-hmm. in that given location. And this article rightly points out, it's like, it's reasonable to assume that these mice, since that's what we're kind of focusing on, although there's obviously other critters that do get killed, or like live there and could theoretically be killed, I guess, that they're like adapted to running away from things. Like that's like what they do. That's their main defense mechanism. And so it's reasonable to assume that they would have an interest in escaping these loud, giant, churning machines that are headed in their direction. Now, obviously, if they're in some big field, you might not be able to see this thing coming, but it feels like kind of obvious that they wouldn't just be sitting there if there was some giant noise and be like, ah, guess this is fine. So the fact that they are just measuring the population density of these animals before and after doesn't paint the whole picture. And then they later did studies that showed that the population density of these animals actually grew in the like surrounding forests and surrounding areas. So it's like, okay, they were displaced. They were relocated. They relocated themselves. Obviously not great for the animals. I'm sure they were happy in whatever home they had chosen for themselves, but it really doesn't paint the full picture when you just measure by the before and after population density in a given area.
Yeah, it's so weird that, I mean, maybe the person that put out this research did say these things, and just whoever, the people that are then citing this article didn't catch them or chose not to look at them. But it's so weird to me that this researcher would be like, oh, there were mice in this field, and now there are not mice in this field. There's only one possible thing that could have happened. Like, maybe in the research it did say, like, hey, I don't know what happened to some of these mice. Doesn't necessarily mean that they're dead, and that they were. And if they are dead, doesn't necessarily mean that they were dead from the actual harvesting process. Maybe he did say stuff like that, and it's just the people that are citing it. As we all know, people tend to just cite sources that are kind of bolstering their own points of view, and even if that's not what the research is really saying, they'll kind of latch on to like a few key phrases or something like that and use that. So that might be what's happening here.
Yeah, I think we've talked about that with a lot of things. I'm thinking about like the headlines that were saying that, you know, cigarettes are as bad as bacon or vice versa. Mm-hmm. And it was like, well, when you look at the actual study, that's not really what they're saying. But it seems like that's probably a case there. And people, I think that, you know, non-vegans often are just looking for some way out of going vegan, some reason to feel soothed in their lifestyle and that they mm-hmm. can feel okay. Well, you vegans are killing just as many animals unknowingly. Even if you think you're just eating vegetables, you still have blood in your hands. I think that was like a big article that goes around every like 2 or 3 years, which is like vegetarians also have blood on their hands, kind of thing. So
yeah,
I think that these are good points. And like they seem so obvious when you think about it, but it's something that I had never thought to really look into. It's like, well, of course mice would run away from these machines. Yeah. And yeah, I'm sure a few do get caught in it. But like for the most part, it makes sense that they would just kind of relocate themselves.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think it's time to move on into our main topic of the week, which is the news that is very timely. We talked about this a couple months ago. That's Amazon acquiring Whole Foods for a whopping $13.7 billion.
Seems a little light.
You said that to me before the show. And
I guess I'm underestimating how much Whole Foods is worth. I guess you always hear the stories about how they get the most like dollars earned from customers per square footage of any other like grocery chain or retail chain or something like that. It feels like $13.7 billion. It's monopoly money.
Like what else? Like what else is in billions? You know,
the amount of animals killed every year for food, Paul.
That's true. So Amazon acquired Whole Foods for what some would say is a large amount of money. And today, August 28th, we're actually seeing the effects of this purchase for the first time. And we're going to read from a few different articles. The first one's coming to us from Bloomberg.com. Amazon cuts Whole Food prices as much as 43% on first day. Amazon.com Inc. spent its first day as the owner of a brick-and-mortar grocery chain, cutting prices at Whole Foods Market as much as 43%. Price was the largest barrier to Whole Foods customers, said Mark Baum, a senior vice president at the Food Marketing Institute and Industrial Group. Amazon has demonstrated that it is willing to invest to dominate the categories that it decides to compete in.
Dominate is such an uncomfortable word when talking about business.
Yeah.
I'm going to dominate business.
And also, illegal, question mark, to have a monopoly? Isn't that like a synonym of dominating an industry, having a monopoly of an industry?
Good point.
Thank you.
We are not experts in this at all.
So many people are at home just like slamming their head into the computer. No. The article also goes into how some rivals have already reacted to the kickoff of what could become a new era of selling food in the U.S. So specifically mentions like Walmart and Costco and how they might have to make some changes because of this Whole Foods-Amazon merge. But the most important news from this article is talking about these price cuts. And even our dear baby Veg News was getting in on this action, on this excitement.
Don't you call them our dear baby until after we've won the Veg News Veggie Award Bowl.
And interestingly, well, I guess not interestingly, but Veg News, the article that they put out, and we'll put a link to that too, is definitely putting it as a good, they're putting a good spin on this, on the lowering of these prices. Like the article itself is called Amazon Buyout Slashes Avocado Prices at Whole Foods. So they're definitely trying to emphasize that it's like, oh, this is going to be good for vegans. However, from this Bloomberg article, it presents this interesting table to us, which is all of the foods that have had price reduction, and then it tells you how much percent they've been reduced by. And it's a couple dozen items of food. And, there's your bananas. They've been, the organic bananas actually went down 30%. The regular bananas went down 38% to 49 cents a pound, which is great.
Oh, hell yeah.
Other things like the avocados, kale, lettuce, almond butter, apples, they all went down. Apples is actually the most decreased food, from 349 to 199, which is a 43% decrease, which is good. These things are good. And I think Veg News is kind of latching onto this, and they're kind of putting forward the idea like this is a good thing to have fruits and vegetables and other products like almond butter reduced in price. However, in addition to all those nice things that have been reduced are some not so nice things. So salmon, tilapia, eggs, ground beef, chicken and butter also received price reductions, and those things actually received some by percentage some of the biggest price reductions. So ground beef went down 29%, the chicken went down 29%. So it's like they're also getting big discounts, which, you know, I guess isn't a great thing.
Yeah, you said almond butter. And all I can think about is Arnold Schwarzenegger pronouncing almond butter.
And how would that be, Andy?
Almond butter.
That was a good.
You like that?
That's a good impression.
I can only do a few Arnie lines.
Almond butter. Do it now. Spread it on my sandwich now.
You're losing it. You're losing it.
Groundbreaking comedy. First person to ever do a mediocre Arnold impression.
So I actually, we were looking, we were trying to do some research because, dear listener, Andy and I know nothing of the economy and how
we are not economists.
We're not going to just throw out something that says like, oh, this is going to affect the world this way, or this is going to affect meat consumption this way, or this is going to affect vegan consumption this way. However,
we can speculate wildly.
Yeah. We can speculose wildly.
If there's any anonymous economists out there that want to lend us a hand.
Anonymous economists. And we were doing some Googling, and I was able to find one piece of research And we'll put a link right to the research paper. It's kind of lengthy, called The Impact of Food Prices on Consumption, a systematic review of research on the price elasticity of demand for food. And
mouthful.
It is, yeah. And unsurprisingly, what the this article or this research paper kind of put forward after doing some research was that if you decrease the price of something, it will increase the consumption of it. And if you increase the price of something, it will decrease the consumption of it. And is that it?
I don't know. It just makes too much sense, Paul.
and the reason they were doing this research is to try to get people to make, like, they were thinking about people making healthier food choices. So they were suggesting things like putting taxes on, like, soft drinks and stuff like that in order to decrease the consumption of it. But regardless, what this, instead of us just making some wild claim, what this piece of research, this one piece of research, of course, seems to put forward is the idea that does make a lot of sense. And that's, you know, if the price of meat is going down, more people are going to buy it, which is not a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. So, I mean, I guess that to me, it's like, okay, if access to organic and presumably healthier, although obviously there's a lot of people out there that think organic is actually worse for the environment in a lot of ways. I'm thinking of specifically recently reading that book Just Food by James McWilliams, and he talks about how, like, non-organic and, like, GMO food specifically can be engineered to use less herbicides and pesticides and all these things. And so actually it's, like, way better. Like, you're putting way less horrible stuff into the environment because that, like, organic food doesn't have chemicals on it, mm-hmm. pesticides on it. But in general, it's like, okay, this seems great. I think that's one of the biggest criticisms levied at Whole Foods, which is they're not accessible. They're kind of this, like, mark of affluence. They're moving into an area kind of represents gentrification in a lot of ways. I know a Whole Foods just got put into Harlem, and that's kind of causing a stink with a lot of people, rightfully so, I guess. So, but it's like, okay, this is cool. Like, if this means that these stores are more accessible to people, even if it does make, you know, meat and dairy and whatnot more accessible to people, still feels like a good thing. Like, it'll yeah. make it easier for people to make choices that are better for animals.
I think so. Are we going to see, though, more problems with the humane meat business? Because Whole Foods definitely pushes that a lot. Like, they have their whole, and we talked about this, I think, very early on in this show, the whole, like, rating system that Whole Foods basically created themselves and to kind of say, like, oh, these are happy cows, and, like, this is happy animals, and all our food comes from this rating of humaneness. So it's like, which is silly, because it's basically like they came up with a rating. They came up with the way to kind of, or they had their hand in creating the way to kind of monitor and judge which rating you get. And then, of course, they themselves get the highest rating. But regardless, I mean, do you think that this is going to, because Whole Foods is big on, like, humane meat, is this going to push that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that the downsides of this are worth giving the finger to, like, poor folks that will now be able to afford a lot of the stuff that Whole Foods has to offer, or maybe yeah. be closer to being able to afford. But I do think that this, it could be a really negative thing in that particular regard, regarding the humane meat and eggs and milk and whatnot. And, of course, dear listeners, we say humane in quotation marks, but that, you know, when someone is just sort of a passive consumer of these animal products, they're a lot easier to kind of get them on board with going vegan. But if there's someone that, like, goes out of their way to purchase quote-unquote humane animal products, it becomes more a part of their identity. And in my experience, and this is all, you know, this is just anecdotal, I suppose, but in my experience talking to those people and trying to get them on board with veganism, it's a lot harder because they've made a choice to be the type of person that purchases humane, cage-free, antibiotic-free, like, whatever it might be. And it's more just, like, a part of who they are. And so mm-hmm. so I guess part of me does worry that if all of a sudden it becomes more affordable to purchase these things that make people okay with animal exploitation, that is going to set us back a bit.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, again, we don't know. We can't predict what's going to happen, and we're not in any position to kind of analyze this kind of stuff.
Oh, we have a podcast.
That makes us experts on everything. But for all we know, this could have little to no effect on that, maybe. But
that's kind of where I'm at. I mean, in general, I'm like, okay, well, if the prices are going down on everything, then it feels like things are going to stay the same. But as you pointed out, the price percentage amount is going down the most, for the most part, on like these animal flesh and secretions. Yeah. So, okay, if those things start to become cheaper, then does that mean people are going to purchase more of those and not the apples or the bananas?
And this was like, you know, a couple dozen products. This was the first day that they did these price cuts. I would assume that this is not the last that we're going to see of these price cuts. So I guess we'll see what happens going from here on out. Like, I imagine that they're going to try to roll these out relatively quickly because they kind of have the press behind it. And it's like, this is, there's so many news. Like, again, this just happened today, and we were flooded with news articles when we Googled about this specific thing. So it's kind of in the limelight right now. So I wouldn't be surprised if they try to make a bunch of moves. I don't know what they'll be, but if they try to make a bunch of moves right now while they're still, they got all this publicity.
I don't know, but it might also make sense for them to roll these cuts out a little bit slower to sustain the news buzz. It's kind of like, you know, when someone's like, when there's the announcements, they're like, this is all the new stuff on Netflix this month.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, these are all the new cuts at Whole Foods this week.
That's true.
So, I don't know. It could go either way. I do know some of the articles that were coming out were listing price cuts that were happening on items that weren't listed on the Bloomberg article of, like, the first official list of items that were going down in price. So, I don't know. It's curious to me that Amazon would do this. I mean, I guess from a business standpoint, it makes a lot of sense. It's kind of like maybe a loss leader, but at the very least, it's kind of something that gets people in the door. If there's all these stories about how much cheaper Whole Foods is now, and people go, and it's really just 15 to 20 things that are cheaper and everything else is the same price, they're going to get a lot more people to go check it out. They might quickly realize they still can't afford to shop there very often, but it is, I guess it's really smart in that regard, but it's also kind of like, if Whole Foods is a company that's making so much money per square foot, like, people are willing to pay what they're charging. It seems like a weird move for them to do that, other than for the publicity.
I also suspect that because it now has this Amazon affiliation, it's like they're trying to do something that makes it seem like, oh, more, this is accessible to more people. And it's like, because I mean, the more people that you can get buying your stuff, the more money you're going to make. And I was saying this to you before we started recording, Andy, it's like, they're cutting a handful of products compared to the thousands of products that they sell. It's like they're not going to lose that much money. I don't believe they're really going to lose that much money. It's kind of like when I remember when there's all these debates always about paying people fair wages, like at Walmart or something like that. And I remember like one of the statistics that was going around was, it's like, in order for Walmart to pay their employees like a livable wage, all they would have to do is increase the price of one product like 1% or something like that.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know. I feel like, although I guess me saying that goes against my point, because that point would be that if they decrease even a few of their things, I guess they are losing a lot of money in the end. So I guess I've talked myself out of the position that I was just thinking.
Yeah, yeah. So, but essentially you could say, well, okay, they decrease the prices here, then they could raise the price in something else. But I think the more reasonable expectation would be they find other places to cut costs. And a lot of people are speculating that, you know, one of the things that Amazon did really well was really centralizing everything. And so there, a lot of people are speculating that's what's going to happen with Whole Foods, is they're going to have like centralized buyers and in Austin, which is like their flagship location. But a lot of people are worried because, you know, Whole Foods focuses a lot. There's certain things you can find at every Whole Foods. You're going to find your tofurkey and your Upton's at most, I guess. But, you know, Field Roast and all those, the kind of the staples, Silk or whatever. But you can find regional things a lot of Whole Foods. That's something I really like. It's, you know, that I can go to Whole Foods in the like Chicago, Milwaukee area, and I can find baked goods from the Chicago diner in their bakery case. or there's this one like vegan chicken salad that I think is the most amazing vegan chicken salad ever, and it's only in like Texas and Louisiana and stuff. So I mean, I guess I would like those things to be everywhere, but in general, I think it's cool that smaller vegan retailers can get in there. Like, I've discovered a few random vegan cheeses at Whole Foods that I've never seen the brand of before because they were in there. And so a lot of people are worried that if they move to a centralized purchasing system, that it'll put a lot of these smaller regional retailers out of business because they can't scale up to the demand that they're going to have to meet. And I think my first thought when I was thinking about, well, how is this negatively going to impact people, was if they're cutting costs on produce, we already know that margins on those things aren't super high, and that the workers that are, you know, harvesting a lot of this produce are not treated super well. So how is this going to squeeze the workers and the producers of these things even more? That's, you know, especially when you think about like avocados. I know those are often embroiled in like some human rights issues. And if they're cutting them by a significant amount, it's like, how is that going to affect people? I found an article that was entitled "Amazon's Whole Food Buyout: What Farmers Are Saying." And This happened before these price cuts started to come in, so it was still a lot of speculation from people. But I'm just going to read a little brief paragraph from that, which says, "Cost competition is another major concern. As more grocers like Costco and Walmart begin to offer organic produce to their customers, price points continue to drop. Quote, that puts a pinch on pricing for everyone, says Jim Durst, co-owner of Durst Organic Growers in Yolo County, California." Fred Durst's cousin, Jim Durst.
Mayor of Yolo.
"Every time I see something cheap in a store, I think some farmer just got screwed." So, you know, and they have accounts from farmers that think that it's a good thing and it'll help them scale up. But they're also, you know, a lot of the smaller operation farmers talk about how like expanding their operations will reduce the quality of their product. They interviewed a strawberry farmer who was working off of, I think, 12 acres of land, and then they scaled up to 24 to meet the demand for a bunch of Whole Foods. And now he's actually back down to 20 acres because he thought he was diluting the quality of his strawberries too much. So, you know, we'll see how that actually plays out. But it does make me wary of, you know, a company that is kind of known for squeezing prices down low, which consumers like, but it's not great for, you know, the sellers of those things. So I guess there's a balance to be found there in like what's good for both parties, because obviously sometimes the sellers and retailers really want to screw over the customer. Maybe even often that's the case, but in cases like produce and stuff, it's just knowing how many human rights violations are already involved in that sector of the market, it makes me really worried.
Yeah, I guess we'll see. For some reason, I'm like, I have this hope that the reason that they're cutting these costs is just to make it more accessible. Like, that's my hope.
Yeah.
It probably comes down to how much money can they make. But I'm hoping that they're doing this from kind of like an altruistic standpoint.
I don't think Amazon does anything from an altruistic standpoint.
But I don't know. I guess we'll see. But even if not, and this would also impact the farmers, and I can't say how this would impact them and if it would impact them very negatively or not. But from the Bloomberg article, it was talking about how this is putting pressure on other like food retail places, and it's putting pressure on them to also lower their prices. Again, I don't know like what's going to happen as a result of this, but I guess it would be good if just like overall food prices go down. I have to also take into consideration how they're making up for those decrease in prices, but I don't know.
Yeah, and I guess also the flip side of my concerns about like the produce workers and like the quality of certain products getting diluted, it makes me wonder, how much more will the welfare rating scale get diluted under these, you know, if the producers of animal products are forced to reduce their costs and get less, you know, reduce their overhead and all that stuff. Not that we want to see animals sold either way, but will it mean a reduction in the efforts put forward to treating those animals on a slightly minutely better you know?
How welfare is that? But no, I know what you're saying. I feel like that's not going to happen though, because unless they get rid of that, their system, they're, I don't think they're going to sell products that are not at the top of their own rating system.
Well, most of their products are not at the top of their own rating really? System. I remember we reported on this. I'm forgetting the exact numbers, but it's like 1 through 5. And the amount of products that were the fifth step welfare rating was like 0.02%. It was like something small, like 10 to 50 products in their store actually reached that welfare rating. And like, I don't know, I forget. I don't think they even have anything that's rated 1. I think it's all 2 or above. And I was at a Whole Foods today and I was walking around the hot bar and I saw some chicken carcasses being sold and they were welfare rating 2. And I was just like, why would you brag about that?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's just so weird. But it's just Whole Foods has created this thing where people feel like they can walk in and anything they purchase is going to be ethical. I think people think that about the produce as well, when clearly there are tons of problems, I'm sure, with the produce there. I mean, they sell Driscoll's raspberries there and they have all the workers' boycotts going on and all those campaigns. So it's like, okay, obviously, you know, you can't feel good about everything you purchase in there. So I don't know.
I feel like there's a weird psychological thing where it's like you go in and you see that there is a rating system. And because you see that there is a rating system, you're like, oh, the things I'm purchasing must be better than at other stores solely for the fact that there is this rating system. And because I think, like we were just saying, you would think that they wouldn't put out things that would be lower on their own rating system. So like even when you see something that's rated 2, you're still like, oh, well, they're displaying this. So it's like this still must be better than some of the other places that I get.
Yeah. And, you know, time and time again, whenever there's hidden or like undercover investigators that do go into these facilities, that even their highest rated facility, I think it was like a pig farm, people go in and still see horrible stuff happening. And so it's like people get lulled into this false sense of security. And so, I mean, I guess I shouldn't even really care about if the things are going to get a little worse for the animals, because they're already very bad for the animals. Like, let's not kid ourselves into thinking that things are good for them at Whole Foods. And, you know, we talked about at The Fork, that film that showed a lot of producers for Whole Foods and how they raise their animals that are in like the best of the best. And the producers, for the most part, thought they were the best of the best, but it was still really disturbing to see how the animals were treated. So, yeah, I don't know.
Wow, this conversation got dark, Andy.
It's what we do here.
Tease you with a few positive stories and then just bring it down.
Yeah.
So I think that's all we're going to say about this for now. Maybe we'll see. Again, this was the first day this rolled out. Maybe we'll see how it plays out in the future. Maybe we'll get some answers to all these speculations that we made. Probably not. But but if you have speculations or more insightful input, please comment on our Facebook, hit us up on the Instagram, or email us at thebeardedvegans@gmail.com, or on Facebook and Instagram, it's just The Bearded Vegans. We always love your input and support.
Yeah, definitely. We'll be keeping an eye on this. And don't forget to go ahead and give us a rating and review on iTunes if you want to help us out.
And don't forget, for everyone that gives us a review on iTunes, you'll be entered to win a famed Bearded Vegans button and sticker
in perpetuity. every 10 episodes, every mailbag episode, you're entered for life.
So even if you don't want it, you still get it.
We're just gonna keep sending you buttons. Yeah,
especially to those in the reviews, the that are like star, yeah, review. These guys suck, and we just keep sending them every
we'll
single
make
day.
Sure that the pin back is undone on those, so when they take it out they get stuck.
It's harsh. So Andy.
Yes, Paul.
What do you got going on?
Well, you got something going on this weekend. You're going to be at the DC Veg Fest on September 2nd.
I am. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. September 8th, 9th, and 10th. Don't forget, we'll be at the Toronto Veg Fest in Toronto, Ontario. And September 9th at 3 p.m. is what our live podcast taping is currently scheduled for. And September 16th, I'll be speaking at the NEPA Veg Fest in Scranton, Pennsylvania. September 23rd, I am going to be speaking at the Chicago Vegan Mania in Chicago, Illinois.
Got all these speaking things coming up.
People found out I speak and that I'll already be at their events. And they're like, you want to just come talk? And I'm like, okay, I'll come talk.
And if anyone, because I have such a lovely reading voice, if anyone wants me to come and Audible, if you're listening and you want me to record some audiobooks, I'm available.
Yes. September 30th, I'll be at the Phoenixville Veg Fest in Phoenixville, Pennsylvania. And that wraps up the month of September. Got a bunch of stuff coming up October and November and December in New York, New Jersey, Oregon, Texas, Massachusetts, Florida, Georgia. All those, you can find all the dates, deets, and links for all of those events at CompassionCo.com. And at all those events, Paul or I will be behind the Compassion Company table slinging those t-shirts. So it should be a fun time.
Yeah, come say hi.
Yeah, we got some stickers and buttons that we bribe people. So we tried to make this episode really short by actually purchasing an Amazon Echo and just saying, Alexa, what does it mean for vegans now that Amazon has acquired Whole Foods? And we're like, oh, this is great. She'll just spit out a whole episode for us. But instead, all she said was the following seven words.
We are the Bearded Vegans, signing off.
And therefore affect more people, whereas the
which in itself is not a bad way to do a study. However, that 17 had died from predation. Paul, edit that in. It's interesting that Davis count. Okay.
Later on, studies were done that then showed that the population density of these animals grew in...
Sorry.
Like, here's all the new films on Netflix.